We're now on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and our goal for today is to make a Siyum Ritz Hashem on Perakira, if we can. We're on the second line, Omar Ab Zera, Omar Ab Asi, Omar Ab Yochanan. So what's important here is to remember that Rab Zera is quoting Rav Asi, so there's a transmission here from Rav Zera in the name of Rav Asi. And after this transmission, Rav Zera is going to ask a question to Rav Asi. What does Rav Asi tell Rav Zera? He tells him, Omar Rav Yochanan, that he heard from Rav Yochanan, who said, Omar Rabbi Chanina, Omar Rabbi Rumnus, that's an unusual name here in the Gemara, but these were Tanoim, who lived at the time of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and the transmission was Lo Hitir Rebbe Litaltil Machto Bi Ephra, that Rebbe gave a heter to this Rebbe Rumnus to move ashes, Efer, inside a Machto. Machto is a kind of a shovel, a pan, which we know from the Beis Hamikdash was used for the incense. And there's a whole discussion in Masechta Yoma about the coals that were in the Machta that were used by the Kohen Gadol, Lifnei V'Lifnim, and the Kodesh Kadoshim. Anyway, the Machta is holding on to Efer, to ashes. And right now the Gemara assumes, we'll see the Gemara is going to change its mind later, that this Efer is Muktza. It has no purpose. Therefore the Machto, which is holding on to the Efer, is also Muktza. And that becomes a Bosis L'Davar Asur. Now alternatively, it could be that this Machto has a different status in Halacha, which is called a klisha malachto le'isur. Its function is for isur. It's used in the context of moving things around, like incense that's burning, and therefore it has the status of a klisha malachto le'isur. But let's assume that the status of the ashes, and therefore this machto that's holding on to the ashes, is that of muktza. Okay then, later on we'll see that the ashes do have a function, but right now we're assuming it doesn't have a function and therefore it's intrinsically muktza. And yet, and here's the radical chidush here, is that Rebbe permitted moving this machta, even as it's holding on to the ashes. And that would be a violation of muktza in a tiltal of basis l'davar asur. Samalei Rav Zera l'Rav Asi, after Rav Zera hears this tradition from Rav Asi, he turns to Rav Asi, he says, Miyom Rav Yochanan Hachi, how did you hear from Rav Yochanan in the name of this Rabbi Rumnus that Rebbe was Matir? It's against the Mishnah. This Mishnah is towards the end of Masechta Shabbos, and the Mishnah says that, just to give a little background, that when you have a basis l'davar asur, davar muktza, you can only move the bosses if inside this bosses is not only mukta, but something that's even more important, that's not mukta, non-mukta object. So the Mishnah says, Notel Odom Bino, via Evan Biyado, O Kalkola via Evan Bisocha. So we have two cases here described in the Mishnah, both are muta betiltal. One is to carry a son, a man is holding on to his boy is holding on to an Evan, and even though indirectly by lifting the child he is moving the Mukta, nevertheless, since in this case, the child longs for his father to pick him up, the Chazal relaxed the strict laws of Mukta in a case of indirect movement of Mukta. But what's more important to us right now is kalkola. A kalkola is usually something that's full of fruits, a kind of a wide utensil, receptacle, a basket. for Evan Besocha, and the Mishnah allows you to lift up that container, that basket, with mukts inside of it. And obviously we need some sort of interpretation here of this Mishnah to explain and justify why you're allowed to move a basis l'davar asur. V'yomer Rabba Bar Bachanan Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan gave us the clue that the Mishnah is referring to Kalkola Malaya Peros Askinon. The case of the Mishnah is where this basket not only has a stone inside of it, but it also has fruits inside of it. In fact, the language of Malaya Peros indicates that there's a large volume of fruits. And therefore it's fair to assume that the primary element inside the kalkol, inside this basket, is non-mukses, the peros. And comes along Rabbi Zeira, and he says clearly from Rabbi Yochanan, you see the implication of lespe peri, if there was only a stone inside this basket, you would not be allowed, lo, you couldn't move the basket, had it not contained fruit, because the basket has the status of basis l'davar asur, davar mukta. So Rabbi Yochanan clearly prohibits moving a basis. How does he state, without blinking apparently, that Rebbe was matir moving this machta, and what it has in it is the ashes? So when Rabbi Zeira raised this question of Asi, Rav Ashi's response was ishtomeh. Ishtomeh means he was confused. Bishah chada, for a matter of an hour or a part of an hour, and he didn't have an answer to Rabbi Zeira's question. But v'yomer, but then he figured it out. Hachinami, just like we said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah of Kalkola with an evan inside of it was a kalkola malaya peros. Let's find a parallel understanding of the heter of Rebbe, the ispe karton, that inside the machta there were not only ashes, which are valueless, but there were granules of unburned incense. And you could actually sift out these karton, and you could start burning the incense again. Now this machta has a cover over it, but it's perforated, it has holes on it. And these granules of unburned incense have a certain pleasant fragrance to them. And let's assume now that the basis, meaning this machta, is now a basis not only for mukta, namely for the ashes, but also for these granules of incense, of unburned incense. So it becomes a basis l'davar asur v'mutar. And the primary value, the objective value, is going to be the granules of unburned incense. And that's why Rebbe gave a heter. And it's very parallel, very similar to the case of Rabbi Yochanan interpreted in the Mishnah of Kalkol Shel Peros. And we're all familiar with this almost on a weekly basis. We have a table, and perhaps there are leichter on the table, we have a candelabra, menorah on the table, which is mukta, but we have other things on the table, we put the two lechem mishnah, the chalas, and therefore we consider that more important, we need the lechem mishnah, and we're allowed to move the table, and it's not a basis because we have the lechem mishnah on the table in addition to the menorah. Now all this sounds great, except for one problem, and that's Rebbe. What do I mean by Rebbe? Rebbe, the Gemara tells us in many different places, was very wealthy. And for him, it's difficult to assume that we would, you know, little pick out these little granules that weren't burnt of the incense and consider them worthy and give them a chashivus so that that would allow you to move to pick up the machta, and that's why Rebbe did so. Omar Abaye rejects this answer. He says, Karatin, Be Rebbe mi chashivi? Can you actually consider these unburned granules of incense to be something of value in the house of Rebbe? We would have to assume that the machta is a basis lemukta, even if it contains not only ashes, but also these granules, because in Rebbe's home, these granules are nothing, they're worthless. Rebbe was the Nasi. He could not have attributed any significance to leftover granules. Who's going to pick them out? And therefore, the granules themselves are muktzah. Not only is the ashes muktzah. V'chi tema, and Abai says, maybe you'll reject my logic and say chazul aniyim, but okay, even if for Rebbe on a subjective level the granules are worthless, but nevertheless for poor people, if they had this machta, they would certainly pick out these granules and it would be worth it for them. They would consider it something of value. So Abai says, that's not so. We have what's called a subjective definition of chashivus, and we're going to borrow that from the laws of Tuma Vitara. For example, in the case of Nige Begadim, which we had a long discussion about back in the previous perek, and with regard to Nige Begadim, we have a principle that Big Day Aniyim Laniyim, Big Day Ashirim Lashirim. If you want to know whether this Beged is a Beged, it has a shame Beged, and it's therefore Makabel Tuma, then take a look. If you're talking about a beggar that's owned by an ani, a poor person, and it may be a shlumpadika dress or suit, which a wealthy person would certainly not wear, is then we have a principle that it's not Makabel Tuma for an ashir, but it would be Makabel Tuma for an ani. Big day Ashirim Lashirim, Big day Aniyim Laniyim. Aval Aniyim Lashirim Lo, if you have a beged which for a poor person might be considered chashuv, and he would certainly wear it and recognize its significance as a beged, for an ani, it's worthless, he would never wear such a thing, he'd throw it in the rubbish bin, and therefore it has no chashivas, it's not Makabel Tuma. And if we apply that logic to the case of karten, of these granules that are of unburned incense, as far as Rebbe is concerned, these are mukta. You know, even if for an ani, it might not be mukta, but for an ashir like Rebbe, it would be considered mukta. Now, we do have what seems to be a parallel case in terms of the size of an orig. If you remember that word orig that we spoke about, a small strip of cloth that could later be used in different ways to weave. And we had a shear for Tumas Negoyim of Sholosh Etzbos al Sholosh Etzbos. Now, what would you do with such a tiny piece of cloth? Well, for the poor people, they could use it as a patch over a rip in their clothing. Wealthy people would lechora, what would they do with a cloth that's only 3x3 etzbos? It's very nice that it's fit for poor people, and therefore it's susceptible to Kabbalah's tuma. But that's if it's in possession of a poor person. What would be the halacha of an orig that sholosh al sholosh its bows that was in the possession of an ashir? Is it susceptible to tuma? And Rabbi Tam here discusses this in Tosas Dibra Maskel Big Day Aniyim Laniyim, and he says bishar tuma sultalia milsa bi yichud. So Rabbeinu Tam has a proof from a Mishnah in Kalim that an orig, which is so small, it's 3 etzbos by 3 etzbos, and even something that you would normally throw in the rubbish bin if you were nashir, nevertheless, it's metame, it's mekabel tumas negoyim, and this is derived from an extra two letters in the word ve'habegah, the vav and the hey. And Rabbi Natan works very hard to interpret that mishnah and prove that mishnah is referring to ashirim. And Tosas basically presents a distinction between Tumas Medrash, which is Mishkav of Azov, and other Tumas. And with regard to Mishkav of Azov, the Gemara is here quoting this distinction between Bigdei Aniyim LaAniyim and Bigdei Ashirim LaAshirim. And the Gemara assumes that that's going to be the paradigm for Muktzah, and it's going to establish that Muktzah depends upon the owner of the Bialim. So at this point, Abai is rejecting Rav Asi. Now he has to offer another explanation as to why Rebbe permitted the movement of the Machto with the ashes inside of it for Rabbi Rumnus. El Amar Abaye, Midi Dahavi Agraf Shel Re'i. And Rebbe said, and Abai says that Rebbe was giving a separate heter, what we call a dispensation, I guess you'd say, a separate dispensation, a matir, for suffering and having to tolerate the discomfiture of being together with a graf shel re'i, which is a vessel for excrement. And nobody wants to sit around with those dirty diapers, so to speak. And here was a special matir that alleviates the muktzah law that normally would apply, and you're allowed to remove items that are used for tzoah to alleviate discomfiture, and especially in the light of the fact that Shabbos and Yontif are days of oneg. So Rebbe was apparently, according to Abai's interpretation now, very intolerant, he was very sensitive to the sight of these leftover ashes, and Rebbe applied this dispensation of Graf Shel Re'i to allow the movement of what normally would be Muktzah, and that's the Machta that has ashes in it. Rava was unhappy with this interpretation for two reasons. Shtei Tshuvas B'Dov, two counter arguments. Now let's go back to define the Machta. The Machta, as we said, had a cover over it, and there were holes in the cover so that any parts of the incense that were burnt would give up this fragrance through the holes, and if there were any parts of the incense that weren't yet burnt, the granules that were unburned, they would also still have a fragrant fragrance. So Rava therefore says that for two reasons, our case of a machta is not classifiable and cannot be compared to Graf Shel Re'i. Chada, number one, Graf Shel Re'i Mois, a Re'i which has excrement in it is certainly repugnant, and no one could tolerate that. But high low Mois, but this ashes are not repugnant. There's nothing repugnant about ashes. The Odin, furthermore, Graf Shel Re'i Migli, it's revealed, and you can see the Re'i. Hi, but this case of the Machta is Michse. There was a cover over the ashes. So therefore the analogy, says Rava, between Graf Shel Re'i and this Machta of ashes is not an accurate one at all. El Amar Rava, now we have a third interpretation of why Rebbe was Mekil. And he allowed you to move the Machta. Not because of the existence of the granules, not because it's a Graf Shel Re'i, but rather based on a story here, Ki Avida Bei Rav Nachman. When Rava says, as a youth, I was a student of the house of Rav Nachman, Havi Metaltalinon, we used to move Kanuna Agav Kitma. So we're talking about a pan that was used for coals, and they would burn the coals for heat. And when they needed ashes, they would take the ashes from this Kanuna, from this pan, and they would use it to cover dirt, and they would move this pan, even though it contained ashes, but the ashes were not considered muktzah. And the reason for that is, afagav deikale shivrei eitzim, there were small chips of wood that were also on top of this pan, and those pieces of wood were certainly muktzah, that's eitzim v'advonim, they had no function whatsoever, but since the ashes had a function, therefore, Rav Nachman would allow moving this pan. So we see that ashes are not necessarily mukta. Our premise in the entire sugya that we've been learning today is that the ashes are mukta, they have no purpose. But you see that they are considered eno mukta, they're not a mukta item because they have a purpose, they're fit for covering dirt. And they're considered more valuable than the chips of wood that are sitting inside this pan, and therefore it's a basis of davar asur mutar. And when Rebbe permitted Rav Rumnis to move the machta with ashes, it was a similar situation where the ashes were not mukta, they had a purpose, and they were used to cover dirt. So Rebbe's chiddush was that you're allowed to move the machta for the use of ashes, and that would apply even if there were pieces of wood, little chips of wood, inside the machta, which were absolutely mukta, because what's considered more chashiv, what's considered the primary object in the machta, that's the ashes and not the pieces of wood. Meisvei, the Gemara now challenges Rava's interpretation of Rebbe's heter, and the Gemara now is going to quote a brisa. The brisa is dedicated to address the machlok stream Rabbi Yehuda of Shimon regarding a ner. So the ner has a status of, according to Rabbi Yehuda, mukta. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's not mukta. Vishavin, the brisa says that even Rabbi Shimon agrees to Rabbi Yehuda that im yeshba shivrei psila, if the lamp has not only oil that remains in it, but it also has remnants of wicks, let's say small piece of wicks, then also l'taltala. We're not going to say that the oil is the main primary element here and the wicks are secondary, and therefore it's basis l'davar asva mutar, and the davar ikar is the non-mukta, meaning the oil. And even Rav Shimon is going to agree that because of these remnants of wicks, which are mukta, therefore the ner takes on the status of a basis l'davar asur. Why not say, based on Rav's logic, just like in the case where you have a pan that has on it not only ashes that are functional, but also chips of wood, we're allowed to move this pan because of the ashes. Why not say that Reb Shimon would certainly allow us to move the lamp because of the oil that's in the lamp? Amar Abaye Bigalila Shanu. Abaye says that brisa was formulated up in the north. And up in the north, flax was very scarce. There was a rarity of flax. It's like today, you know, you try to get eggs here, you try to get toilet paper, whatever it is, there's a scarcity. And therefore, flax now becomes something that's more valuable than the oil. And therefore, you cannot consider the oil to be primary. Now, you might ask me, well, if these wicks are so chashuv, then maybe they shouldn't be mukta at all. And yet it says, v'shavin shem yesh ba shivrei psila, asur l'taltala. So the answer is, we have to differentiate between shivrei psila and psilos. Although psilos are very important in the Galil, and they are scarce, however, in the case of shivrei psila, and these are broken pieces, that's a different story. So the Gemara thought in the Habavita that the used oil is more valuable and more useful than wick, and therefore this should be analogous to the case of the kanuna agav kitma. And just like there we don't consider it a basis, here also we shouldn't consider it a basis. That was Gemara's kasha. And we seem to be able to derive from this brisa of a shavin regarding shivrei psila, that if you have a kli that has mukta, it's considered a basis, unless the non-mukta item is far more valuable than the muktzah item. Like, for example, the case of kalkol shel peros, there we said it was full malea peros, and that makes it so much more valuable than a stone. But when it comes to oils and wicks, you know, we thought we were in the same bracket, and it's more or less the same, and therefore maybe we should prove that this is called a basis and it's muktzah, and the same should apply to the case of shivei etzim with the ashes, with the afer. Now, when the Gemara answers Amar Abaye beglila shanu, it means that in glila they would gather together these shivrei psilos and they would use them for lighting. That was very valuable to them. There was a scarcity of flax for wicks, and since these wicks are designated exclusively for lighting, therefore on Shabbos they have no function whatsoever, and therefore they're muktzah. And the shemen is not something that's more chashiv, at least in Galil, than the shivrei psilos. Now, at this point, the sugya is going to go on a different path, a little bit different than muktzah. Now we're going to talk about the isa called makabe patish, when you put together various parts or segments of, let's say, a bed, and you assemble them, and whether or not that's a violation of makabe patish. So before we leave our discussion of muktzah, let's just add something that we left out yesterday, we just didn't get a chance, and that is the question on the top of Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph about the flame itself. And we said that the flame itself is muktzah, and therefore the ner and the shemen and the psila all have the status of a basis l'davar os. So as far as the flame itself is concerned, and we have a section here in the back in the Al-Kabirim called Madua HaShalheves Muktza. So he says the following. Kevin Sha'asur Lagas Ba, since we're not allowed to touch the flame, Nechsheves Dvar Dvar Asur. So that which you're not allowed to touch is considered a Dvar Asur. And the flame, of course, is held up by the shemen and the ner. Without the shemen and the ner, there's no flame. And therefore, the shemen and the ner are classified as a basis. So as long as the flame is alive and active, and it's lit, then the shemen and the ner and the psila all are classified as a basis l'davar asur. Now, he quotes here an achron called the Ma'orei Eish, which is an appropriate title for our discussion about Shalheves. And he says the following, Kevan Shalheves Oleches Umischalefes Kol Azman Me'amud Arishon L'Sheni M'Sheni L'Shlishi V'Hi Ikar V'Choshim Ma'od L'Chein Ro'on Osa K'Dover Nifrod Me'etzim Aner V'Shemen. The Kamen Shein Bob Mamish, the Eno Bechlal Dvarma Mitaltalim, Gon Kalim Vyochlim, Vishar Dvarma Nitom, Shabbos Chen Yeshalav, Shein Mukta. So the Mori Aish is making two points. Number one, that the Shalheves is a separate entity unto itself. He calls it Ikar Bechosh Miod. And the reason for that he dramatized because the flame keeps changing, it keeps, so to speak, recreating itself. Anyway, it's chashiv miod, and therefore it's independent of the ner, the shemen, and the wicks. And then add to that another element here, that's a davar shein bo mamish. It's not something substantial or tangible like food and utensils, which can be moved on Shabbos, and therefore it has the shein muktzah.
He also mentions in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein that a shal heves is mukta machmas gufa, simply because it's not a kli. It has the same status as our eitz of avonim that are not a kli, and therefore it is mukta. Would I be able to find an answer to another question, and that is, what is the basis for this classification as an Isur Muksa called Basis L'Davar Asur? And although I don't find anything right this minute, but I would say the following. We're talking about a concept called Bittel, that the Basis, insofar as it functions only on behalf of that which it's holding on to, and that which it's holding on to needs the bosses, that relationship is sort of like a bittel relationship, and the bosses sort of loses its own identity to the mukta that's on top of it.
So here on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, take a look at Rashi Divrei Maskil Ha. He writes, quote, "The kli nase bosses la'even utfelo lo ubatel toras kli didei." Rashi has something similar later on in Daf Mem Tes. But it seems from Rashi that a basis is batel minei shem kli. And what does that mean? So I just want to read to you two lines here from the Hari Kedem. He writes, "Nira abir di al yidei zeshu miyuchad lios basis l'davar asur v'ein haner omed l'tiltul kol zman shalav is ovakein who nechshav kidora kavua bimkomo batel minei shem kli." Which means that since you can't move the mukta, therefore you can't move the buses, and if you can't move the buses, then it's not a kli, because we said over and over again that the basic definition of a kli is something that is movable, and we said that we have machmas chisar and kis, which is later on in Masechta, that's also batel minei shem kli, because it's, you know, it's set in its place, you don't move it from one location to the other. He says, "Lefiz enira de basel davros avidin chada shal mukta de batel minei shem kli v'avi kekol mukta machmas gufo ke'etzim ukavonim." So this concept of bosses generates a new category of something that is not movable because of the muksa that's on top of it, and therefore it becomes batel mimenu shem kli. Okay, let's go on now and see if we can finish Parakira. Levi Bar Shmuel Ashkechinu L'Rabbi Abo L'Rabbi Huna Rav Huna Bar Chia Davakaimi Apischa Debei Rav Huna. So we have a group of Chachamim of Hamoraim that are standing at the entranceway into Rav Huna's house. Amar Lehu. So Levi, who found these other Chachamim, turns to them and he says, "Maula hachzir mita shel tarsiim b'shabbos. Are you allowed to reassemble a bed, mita, of tarsiim?" Now tarsiim has two meanings, as Rashi points out. They're either coppersmiths or weavers. Okay, Rashi offers both translations. And what's unique about these Balei Melacha, these coppersmiths or weavers, is that they use portable beds. They're always on the run, on the travel, on the go, and they want to be able to move with their beds. I mean, we have something similar today. You'll have hikers that take their beds, you know, folded up on the back, on the knapsack. Now, these beds, when they were assembled, you didn't use screws or nails, you just fit together the various pieces. And the Gemara is going to say they fit together loosely. So Levi Bar Shmuel wants to know whether or not there would be a problem of Makabe Patish by putting together these parts of the bed and reassembling the bed. And we're going to have two extreme shitas over here. Amrulei, they replied, Shaper Dummy's allowed to do this. but also lekami de Rav Yehuda. When Levi Bar Shmuel came in the presence of Rav Yehuda, Amar, he said, "Ha Rav Shmuel, the Amit Shavaya Masiv Mita Shel Tarsim B'Shabbos Chayiv Chatos." The other extreme, just the opposite, is true. That if you reassemble this bed of Tarsim by piecing together the pieces and fitting them together, that itself is a violation of a Malacha Dorais for which you Chayiv Chatos. So according to Rav and Shmuel, if you reassemble this bed, you violate the Malacha Makav of Patish. And any formation, any completion of a utensil, of a tool, is Makav of Patish. Now, what about Malachas Bona? So that's a different story, because Ein Binya B'Kalim, the Malachas Bona only applies to Karka or Mechubel L'Karka. And all this is Shitas Rashi. The Ramban has a different Shita, and he holds that raise the possibility of Makav Patish by putting together pieces that fit together loosely without striking them with nails and making them some sort of permanent connection. So the final act of an expert, which is called, of an artisan, of a worker, whatever it might be, Bal Malacha, which is called Makav Patish, requires certainly striking in a very unusual way, and it requires professional work, because you turn the screws and you knock in the nails. And therefore, the Ramban assumes that Rav and Shmuel are of the opinion, which is Machlokas and the Gemara and Beitza, that there is Binyan B'Kalim. And when it comes to Binyan, any section, any shlav, any stage in Binyan is called Meleches Bona. So for example, in Perek HaBona, we'll have a case where he puts one layer down of stone, and he's chayav for Bona, even though he's going to put another layer, and another layer, and another layer. Could be the person who puts down the cement on top of a layer of stones, he's chayav from Meleches Bona. So Meleches Bona, as opposed to Makav Patish, does not require this finality, you know, this very, very last stage. And therefore, the Ramban thinks that the better way of going here, in order to understand Rav and Shmuel, is to apply the principle of Yesh Binyan B'Kalim. Meisve, the Gemara now rejects this kula of Rav Levi Bar Shmuel, who allowed, and also Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna, who allowed to put together this Mita Shel Tarsim from a Braisa. And the Braisa says, Amachzer Knei Menorah B'Shabbos Chayev Chatos. You have a menorah, which is made up of different segments, different parts. And if you put together these different parts on Shabbos, the Braisa says, you Chayev Chatos. And once again, according to Rashi, we would assume he's Chayev Chatos by putting together the various parts and branches of this candelabra, because he's doing Makav Patish. And the Ramban would learn that we're dealing with Meleches Bona. The Braisa continues, Knei Sayadin lo yachzir v'im hichzir potter avaloser. So a Sayad is a plasterer, and he has this long pole. At the end of the pole, he has this piece that he uses to plaster. And he has different pieces that make up this pole. He can extend the pole if he wants to make it longer. So his rag or his brush is at the end of the pole, the tippy top of the pole, but the long pole itself is made up of different sections. He can add, he can subtract, he can adjust the pole's length, depends on how high he has to get, and so forth and so on. Here in this case, although he's not allowed to do this and put together the pieces of his stick, but nevertheless, if he does so, he's not chayav chatos. He's only violating an iser derabbanan. So this knei or pole or stick, that's only an iser derabbanan when he puts it together. And the reason for this is that everything is temporary. You know, he adjusts it, he changes the size and extends it, puts in this piece, takes out that piece. That would only constitute a violation of an iser derabbanan. Now the Braisa quotes Rav Simai, Omer, Keren Agula Chayev, Keren Pshuta Potur. So here we're talking about different kinds of musical instruments. We call them wind instruments. And you have a bass that has different holes in it. You put the pipes into the different holes. Each pipe has different pitch. And when you insert them in, then it depends. In the case of a karanagula, of a round horn, you need a professional, a technician, to figure out how to put it in a way that it'll stay. And that's called makabe patish. In the case of a karen pshuta, we don't need a professional technician because the pieces are inserted very loosely and they're constantly removed, and therefore it's only a violation of an isur derabanan, and therefore it's pata avalos. In any event, let's just summarize this price. So the price is certainly predicated on the assumption that when you put together branches of a candelabra, and for that matter, if you put together the various parts of a musical instrument, and you need to assemble them, this is considered a violation of a chiv chatas. How then could the chachamim, in the story of Levi bar Shmuel, in Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna bar Chia, how could they allow you to put together a mita shel tarsiyah? When you reassemble a coppersmith's bed, that's very similar to reassemble the branches of a menorah, of a candelabra, which we said is a chiv chatas. So the Gemara says, Inu di omer ki hai tana disanya. So those like Rav Huna and Rav Abba who were mekil in the case of Amita Cheltarsim, they allowed you to put this all together, they reflected the sheet of the following tana. Disanya, we learned in a brisa. Malbinos hamita vekaros hamita ulevachim shel skivas lo yachzirim hichzir patur avalosur. So if you turn to Daf Mem Zayin of Beis, you'll see patur avalosur. So we're talking now about loose connections. We're talking about milbanos hamita, bed sockets. We're talking about karos, which are bed legs. We're talking about attaching levachim shel skivas. You know, let's say if you have an arrow, I should say a bow, so you need a little piece that you hold in the bow with your left hand so that you can adjust the arrow, and the arrow fits into this piece, which is called a levachim, crossbow nuts. All these are attached and reattached. They are very, very temporary. They're not permanent. And they don't require what you would call nuts and bolts, which is otherwise known as, if you take a look at the top line of Mem Zayin Amid Beis, velo yitka, to nail them in. And therefore, in these cases, you violate an isur derabanan. That's the shita here of the Tanakama. As long as it's only a temporary kind of, I should say temporary, but more important is that it's not a technician, it's not permanent in the sense that you need to knock in nails. But if you do knock in nails, that's called imtaka, then chayev chatas. Now you violate the malacha of makabe patish. But the Braisa quotes a second shita, a tana who descends, and that's from Shimon Gamliel Omer. Im haya rafui mutar. If the fitting is loose, like in the ratio that we spoke about, of all those different kelim, then mutar. The Rabbanan didn't even prohibit it. And if by analogy we apply that to the coppersmith's bed, the parts that fit together to reassemble this bed are fit together loosely, and if they're loosely fitting, that's called rafui. It's mutal chatchila, according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And therefore, those Amoraim would have a great tana whose shoulders they could stand on. That's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Again, there's no question that if he nails in the various pieces, he violates the malacha d'oraisa of makabe patish. However, if there is no nailing and everything is just fitting in pieces tightly together, then Rav Shimon Gamliel says the following. If the pieces are tight, a tightly fit, that would be a violation of an Issur Darabanan, that would be Patur Avolos. But if they're loosely fit together, then we don't have any chashash that he might come to nail them in. It's a whole different entity, and it's mutar even l'chatchila. And therefore, when you have a loosely fitted bed, its status is equal to, or shall we say parallel to, a loosely fit kli, like the cases of Melbanos Hamita, Karos Hamita, etc., which, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because that Rafui on Mutul Chatchila. The problem that we have now is if the bed is loosely fit together, this Mita Shel Tarsim, and that's why the Amoraim allowed you to do it, how is it possible, how is it thinkable that Rav and Shmuel would have said that for assembling, reassembling this bed, you're Chayev Chatos? And that's the Kashi of Tosfos. Now, if you look at the Tanakhama, this Raisa, who was more machmir, he only set up an Issur Darabanan in a case where it's loosely fitting. It's only when he knocks in the nails and Yitaka, only then is he violating a Doraisa. How could Shmuel and Rav hold in the case of Mita Shel Tarsim, that would be a violation of Meleches Makom Patish Doraisa? Excuse me. Got something caught in my throat. Hopefully I'll get rid of it as we go along. And Tosis offers the following answer. Then Rav and Shmuel are talking about a bed where you have to fit the pieces tightly. And we had the case in the previous Brisa of the menorah. And the Brisa said that in the case of menorah candelabra, since you fit the various pieces tightly together, although without a technician and without nails, that generates a chiyuv chatos. So Rav and Shmuel would reflect that sheet of that tan in the Brisa, that reassembling a candelabra, and for that matter, a bed, is a violation of the Brisa because the parts are fitting together tightly. Now again, in contrast to the sheet of Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna and Levi, they were mekil with regard to the bed. But that's only, says Tosfos, in the case where the parts of the bed are fitting together loosely. So it's reasonable to assume that if you were to reassemble a utensil with tightly fitted parts, that could be also doraisa. And when I say tightly fitted, I mean the fitting is really, really tight. Not professional, but tight. And Rav and Shmuel would go as far as to say that that's a doraisa, and that's a malacha of makom patish. If it's loosely fit together, Rav and Shmuel would say that that's a rabbinic prohibition, patur avol asur. And Rav Abba and Rav Huna bar Chiya, they follow the opinion of Shimon Gamliel that to reassemble a utensil that has tightly fitted parts is only a rabbinic isur, and if it's loosely fitted parts, then it's even mutul chatchil. Bei Rav Chama Havimita Glal Nisa. So in the house of Rabbi Chama, there was this kind of sectional bed that you put together the various parts, similar to the coppersmith's bed that we spoke about before the Mita Shel Tarsim, and have a Mahadri Lei Biyoma Tova. And on Yontif, he didn't blink, and he allowed reassembling this bed, and if he allowed it on Yontif, we can assume he would allow it on Shabbos as well, just the case. The case that came up was a Yontif case. There's no heter of Makom Patish or Binyan on Yontif. So now, Amalei Ahu Mirabbanan LeRava, not sure why Rava here is guilty, but anyway, one of the rabbis says, Rava, my daitech, apparently Rava agreed with this psak of Rav Huna. There's another possible girsa in the Gemara, but in any event, is binyan min atzadhu. This is an unusual kind of binyan. But nevertheless, nehi doraisa, the isur doraisa leka, isur darabanan mi'ika. How could Rav Chama allow this l'chatchila? It should be at the very least an isur darabanan. You could call it binyan min atzad. It's an unusual kind of a binyan, because he assembles it loosely without screws. That's not usually how you complete a utensil. So again, even if there's no violation of a doraisa, but nevertheless it should be a violation of Yisud Rabbanan, Omar Lay. So he responded to him, and he said that I hold like Rabbi Shimon that if you have these loosely fitted, roughly situations, like in all those kalim that we mentioned with the bows and arrows and so forth and so on, then that's mutar even lechatchila. So we're up to the last Mishnah in Perkira. Nosnim kli tachas haner lekabel nitzotzos. The Gemara is going to have a problem with this because of the principle called mevatel kli meichano that we discussed. But anyway, you're allowed to place a receptacle under a ner in order to receive the falling sparks and presumably to prevent any damage that might come from these sparks. And this would be allowed even on Shabbos. V'lo yitein l'socho mayim. But you're not allowed to be goreim kibui, which means that if you put water into this vessel, that's going to put out the sparks, mipnei shu mechabe, and he'd be in violation of the Iser Kibui. So the Gemara immediately asks the following question: Komavatel kli meichano. You have a non-muksa kli, and by placing it underneath the nitzotzos, underneath the ner, to be mekabel nitzotzos, it now becomes muksa. And as we learned earlier on Daf Mem Beis, we're not allowed to take something that that is not mukta and make it into mukta. So the sparks themselves are mukta. They're falling into a kli now that becomes a basis la mukta. Now you're not allowed to move that kli for the whole balance of Shabbos. And that's against Rav Chisda, who says that you're not allowed to be mevatel kli meichan. Back on Daf Mem Beis, Mem Gimel. In other words, the sparks immediately extinguish themselves as soon as they fall into the kli. And therefore we don't call the kli a basis l'davar asur, because the sparks are completely gone. They have no substance. The Mishnah states, but you're not allowed to place water into this kli that's receiving the sparks, because that's called kibui. Lema, it would appear, Tana Stama Kirab Yossi, that this Shita of Rabbi Yossi is reflected in our Mishnah. The Omar, what does Rabbi Yossi hold? Goreim the Kibui Os. You're not allowed to indirectly cause Kibui on Shabbos. Now, obviously, he's not directly putting out the sparks. He's only setting up a system where the sparks will fall into a Kli that has water in it. And the Gemara later on in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Beis establishes that if there's a fire and you want to prevent the fire from spreading, so you could set up a row of vessels that are full of water, and the fire is going to hit those vessels, it's going to break those vessels, the water is going to spill out, and that's going to put out the fire. Rabbi Yossi, in that Mishnah, Daf Kuf Beis disagrees, and he says that you're not allowed to do such a thing. Why? By setting this this Chadgadia, by setting up this sequence, he violates the sort of Gram Kibui. He's causing Kibui. Again, if we're talking about Pikuach Nefesh, that's a different story. So that, in general, we have a principle that Grama is only Drabbanan on Shabbos. The Tanakhama holds that in the case of financial loss, because of the terrible consequences of this fire, the Drabbanan step aside, and they're going to allow you to do Gram Kibui. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, holds that Gram Kibui is apparently a Doraisa, so that Kibui is different than any other Malacha, and Gram Kibui is us. So we can't allow it for the sake of financial, to prevent financial loss. Now, in our Mishnah here, at the end of Perkira, by setting up this container of water, and now the sparks are going to be extinguished when they hit the water, this is again gram kibui. He's indirectly extinguishing the sparks. And once again, he doesn't want to cause a fire when the sparks hit the ground. And our mission that prevents, that prohibits you doing so, apparently reflects the shita of Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara argues against this. V'tizbara, is your logic really solid? Amar d'yomer Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi only prohibited b'Shabbos, but b'erev Shabbos mi'omar. We never found that Rabbi Yossi would prohibit setting up a system of gram kibur on erev Shabbos. So why would our Mishnah, even if it reflects the shita of Rabbi Yossi, prohibit placing this receptacle with water under a lamp before Shabbos? B'Shabbos. And if you can tell me that our Mishnah is only prohibiting this on Shabbos, but in a chinami on erev Shabbos, you'd be allowed to do this. V'atanya. We have a brisa that's mefura shlehedra. It says nosnim kli tachas hanel lekabel nitzos b'shabbos v'ein tzarch lomar b'erev Shabbos v'lo yitin l'socho mayim b'nei shum mechabe. And that's me'erev Shabbos ein tzarch lomar b'shabbos. So the brisa explicitly goes on record saying that you're not allowed to put this kli. Again, if you want to put the kli, just to dry kli to receive the sparks, that you're allowed to do even on Shabbos, but on In a kli that's full of water, you're not allowed to set that up even on erev Shabbos. Elom Ravashi. So therefore, the Gemara has to come up with a whole new interpretation of this Mishnah. Afilu teimer rabbanon shiny hacha mipnei shemakariv es kibuyo. So Rashi uses a sort of ambiguous language. He says, "What's makariv es kibuyo?" He says, Zimein kibui lehedja. I think lehedja means immediately. V'avile mechaba mamish. So this is not comparable to the case where the fire is going to hit the vessels and they're going to burst the vessels and the water is going to put out the vessels. Or let's say, for example, the sparks would come falling into a vessel that has water. That would be an issue of gram kibui. And we came to the conclusion that Gram Kibur and Erev Shabbos would be Mutter. This case in our Mishnah is also because it's a different kind of Gram Kibui. It's Makarives Kibuyo. Rashi says, Zimein Kibui Lehejo, which means that immediately the sparks fall into the water. Grama always requires a, what we call a Bezech or Zeh, some sort of sequence, where you do action X, and then at some time period a little bit later, at stage 2, action Y, the repercussion occurs. But here we're talking about a case where immediately when the water is placed and the sparks fall into the water, they are extinguished. And that's called Makarev Kibuyo. And even if I hold the Gram Kibui is Mutter, in all those cases where there's a time sequence, but Makarves Kibuyo is also. Here, I'll just read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, Makarves Kibuyo, Shezime Bekach Es Akibui Bibirur, Sheminesina Samayim Tachas Aner, Mechaba Mamish Es Aish. Im also came Beshabbos Chayav Mishum Mechaba, Fiaf Berev Shabbos also Lassus King Gzera, Shemayasa came Beshabbos. So we have here a Doraisa of Kibui if he did it on Shabbos, and a Drabonon of Kibui, a Gzeira Archok if he did it on Erev Shabbos. The case where he sets up the vessels near the fire. She'eno Ela Goreim L'Rosh She'tichbe Kishetagia Eish L'Kelim Ha'eish Hi She'tivakeim. The fire will take apart the, burst open these kelim, and then memela techabe machmas hamayim. So laniach as hakelim zeu grama bilvad. But here, that's happening immediately and definitely. The sparks are going in on Shabbos. That would be meleches mechabe doraisa, and on erev Shabbos, that would be a melacha derabbanon exeret derabbanon. Hadron alecha perek kira. We have now completed the third Perek of Shabbos, and we're about to start Perek Bamet Tomeh.